Hi, my name is Blake Pady, and this is Uncommon.
Uncommon is a production focused on the why of business, media, and marketing. It's made by my team at Neural, a digital agency for challenger brands and talent. To learn more, just visit neural.com. That's N-E-U-R-A-L-L-E.com. My guest this week, Blake Pady, comedian, creator, known for his character work on TikTok. We've met in person, but it's a real pity we couldn't have you here in person. Obviously, we're locked down in Melbourne. How's rural New South Wales?
Oh, it's great. I've just been in ISO for 2 weeks, so it's good to finally get out. I can actually go get absolutely maggoted again, so I'm keen for that. Should be good.
What, the town you grew up in, Corowa, is it?
Yeah, Corowa, yeah.
How many people live in this town?
Last time I checked, it was around 6,000, 6,500. So about 0.1% of my following, pretty much.
I like it. Yeah, it's a small audience. I want to get into growing up in a town like that a little bit later, but there was a few banger questions that got sent through as icebreakers. So the most important one I thought was we should do a fuck, marry, kill.
Yep.
And it was based on your characters. Fuck, marry, kill, Paul, Sebastian, or Cheryl?
Ooh. Right. I'd marry Paul because okay. I feel like he'd be probably the most wholesome person and just like most husband material out of him. Probably kill Sebastian just because he hasn't been around for very long, or we haven't actually seen him in a while. Hopefully I'll bring him back soon. And I'd fuck Cheryl because I want to hear the dirty talk with that voice. I reckon that'd be the best thing. Just the, oh yeah, fucking root.
God, that character, I got to say, is my favorite character. I mean, you do the old like tuck shop, 1,000-pack-a-day ciggies type lady. It's just, I don't know what it is, but it's so on point.
Yeah, people. It seems to be the new favorite. It was like, it sort of changes every time I bring a new one out, but Cheryl's been the one that seems to have stuck sort of for the longest amount of time. It was Paul for a while, and then I think Cheryl's just overtaken him for fan favorite.
Yeah, and so for context of people who don't know you, Paul is the dad, right?
Paul's the dad.
Yeah, so Paul is the character that I found you from.
Yeah.
So... yeah, he's a real, like, Paul is probably one that will always be there, so to speak. Just a wholesome dad character.
Pretty much, yeah. It sort of just started from when I first was sort of using TikTok, because I was one of the blokes that sort of, back around 2019 when everybody was sort of hopping on it at the start, I was like, nah, this is shit house. It's a shit app. It's going to die in like 2 years. And then I just sort of like just hopped on it one day, chucked on a pair of ASIC shoes and sort of just did an impression of my dad, who's actually named Paul. So I just named it after him. And then, yeah, it sort of just, yeah, that's how it started. So he's been the one sort of character that's really stuck all the way through.
Yeah, because your growth, you're right, 2019 seems about right. Your growth, I think, was pretty remarkable. I mean, you and this girl on our roster, Haley, she was known as Halo Haley, were the two of the first people I found on TikTok. So it must have been, I don't know if you saw like that TikTok rewind recently, but it tells you like when you got on the app. I think it was August 2019 for me. So you would have been what, 17 at the time?
Pretty much, yeah. I think I got TikTok. I actually downloaded it in about September 2019. So, yeah, I would have been 17 and then started blowing up in sort of December 2019. So, right before I turned 18.
That makes sense. Okay. So, your character work was clearly like the thing that drew a lot of us in. And I think now you've got over 750,000 followers, clearly an audience on Instagram as well. And you're about to launch into YouTube. When you think back to that period, why TikTok?
I don't know. I think a lot of people can sort of relate to me from like a creator standpoint if people are making videos as well. It really just started by accident. I think most of the people that I've talked to and, you know, that I've become friends with over my time doing it have just sort of started it. They just had some random idea that popped into their head and it blew up and people, you know, really got around it and started, you know, kept on requesting them to do it. So, and that's, you know, how I built my following. Like people, I was only really going to stick to that one dad video that went viral, but all of the comments were just like, do this again. And so I just started doing it, and it didn't really click that I was going to probably do it full time until probably like 2 months into it. I was like, yeah, this dad thing might last, you know, 2 months or something like that, but yeah. It's turned into something a lot bigger than that now. So, so yeah, it's just been crazy.
Yeah, so that's the interesting part that I noticed a lot of talent that, so it's like the platform draws you in, right? Obviously, you could do this stuff on Instagram, but I think there are things that you can only do on TikTok.
Yeah.
And that is the nature of TikTok. So it draws you in as a platform. You do this thing and then you have an awareness to read the comments and go, okay, there's something in this. I should continue doing it. And then it flourishes into something else. So that's always the interesting part, is like, it's the initial bit of work that blows up, and the ones that continue to succeed like yourself, it's like, okay, there's that bit of work. Then it's the reading of the comments and understanding the audience, like really feeding off them, because a lot of people can't do that. And then it's, you get to like another stage. And I feel like Milligram has had this recently where you get stuck on one character and you have to find a way to deviate into other characters.
Yeah.
When was that period for you? Because you now have like these pretty prominent characters that people identify with. But when was that period where you thought, okay, I should probably stop just doing it about Paul. I need something else.
Well, I think the second load of characters I did after Paul was the two girl characters, Tiff and Jess. And again, it was the exact same as Paul. It sort of just started by accident. I did my first video as a teenage girl without like a wig or anything. I was literally just in my school jumper, and it was just about a girl getting her peas. And I was just doing an impression of that. And people just started commenting, oh my God, you sound exactly like, you know, Jermay, and you sound exactly like my mate that, and then they tag their mates and all that sort of stuff. So I was like, if I could just chuck a wig on one of these impressions that I do, I can just make a whole character out of that. And then sort of from there, I started thinking, oh, who else could I do? How can I branch out a little bit more? And just started to get more crazy with it. So like from that, I just sort of started making my content around like, how can I be Chris Lilly from fucking Aldi, pretty much. That was how I would describe my content.
Yeah, right. Chris Lilly from Aldi. That's fucking gold. Okay, so this is about the time you start doing this, about the time you finish high school. There's an interesting story on that people should check out, Luke and Lewis's second episode with you about you potentially getting expelled. But, you know, straight out the gate, you're working as a content producer at the ABC. I think it was February of this year.
Yep.
You're now a social media manager, also at SCA on the street team. How early did you realize that you were a funny guy? Like, did you ever get a sense at a young age that you had a bit of comedy about you?
I'm not too sure. I think it was just like more like a lot of all of my family pretty much are just easygoing, funny people. So I guess I sort of like, you know, adopted that from them. Like my mum is one of the funniest people that I know. And my dad's just like pretty much like he is in the videos pretty much that I just take off. But I think it's just the people that I grew up around pretty much, just like, don't take yourself too seriously. Just have a bit of a laugh about everything. Like yesterday, I accidentally smashed my parents' like glass sliding door, and you know, like I told them I was shitting myself about telling them, but they sort of just like were pissed off for about 5 minutes, and then we started making jokes about it. So it's just like that sort of environment that I grew up in has probably sort of aided, you know, what has become what I do now. So I think,
yeah, right.
Like as a kid, I was pretty like in primary school age, I was pretty sort of like sensitive and shy and all that sort of stuff. But then sort of as I hit high school about year, you know, 7, 8, 9, pretty much, that's when I really started to sort of come into my own pretty much. And I thought, yeah, like I would just make mum laugh at home and all that sort of stuff. And I think that's probably the biggest indicator of if you're funny or not, if you can make your parents laugh. So that was probably the first time that I thought, oh yeah, I might, you know, be somewhat funny. But yeah, again, I didn't really think I'd be able to make a career out of it. You know, the only sort of thing you can do in the, you know, a rural country town is either become a tradie or depressed pretty much. Those are the two, avenues.
Or a depressed farmer.
Pretty much, yeah. That's the range of career possibility for you in Corowin, New South Wales.
Yeah, right. So when you think about like your childhood, what's like the earliest memory you have of growing up in Corowa?
Yeah, good question. I'm not too sure. I think it's just like, you know, just hanging out with mates, just doing all that country boy stuff, really playing footy. We're right on the Murray River. Like I live like two streets away from the Murray River. So just like going to the river, going to the lagoon, all that sort of stuff. And just sort of like, and now just going to the same pub every weekend, pretty much. It was pretty much a very routine sort of lifestyle that was pretty easy going and chill and all that sort of stuff. So yeah.
Do you have any like defining moments that you feel like that really stand out from your childhood? Like things that, like I give the example, there was one moment in my life where my old man, like he decided to try, because we were at the skate park. And so we were going down this skate ball and he was like, oh, I'll give that a shot. And the moment he goes down, he double dislocated his foot.
Yeah.
Like going down and coming up the bowl. And like that for a 10-year-old was a very like serious memory just ingrained in my head. Do you have any like things like that growing up?
Nothing too specific. I guess like sort of the stuff that stuck around for me and my family is just like piss takes and stuff we've said over the years and just like funny little family stories like on holiday and all that sort of stuff. Like one that I keep coming back to, I was on like my first ever holiday to Queensland when I would have been about like 4 years old. It was like 2006 or something. And we were walking through the airport and my dad saw Rove McManus. And like I was 4 years old, I didn't know who fucking Rove McManus was, but my dad like went up to him and was like, kids, it's Rove. It's come on, say hello to Rove. And Rove just looked at him like, who's this cockhead coming up to me? And then like that's something I always think of and like makes me giggle, sort of just like
so
that.
Funny.
Yeah, just sort of that like aspect of like just being a crazy fan pretty much. Like, and me and my brother are just standing there like, who the fuck's this bloke pretty much?
Yeah, what did Rove say? Like, did your dad ask him for an autograph or anything like that?
No, he literally just said to us, oh, kids, say g'day to Rove. And Rove just looked at us and was like, yeah, g'day, how you going? And then, you know, now obviously having like a little bit of a following on TikTok, people come up to me and now I sort of know how Rove feels when sort of cockheads come up to him like that and just like, yeah, just act like absolute imbeciles. But yeah, and just like other little stories here and there from the family that just always make us crack up every now and then. But yeah.
What do your parents do for work?
Well, my dad, we've got the like the big Uncle Toby's factory, like right next to Corowa, just over the border. So my mum and dad both worked there for a bit. Now it's just my mum there. My dad works as a like a line manager and like a supervisor at a like a piggery pretty much. So okay. Yeah, that's what they do. And then my sister, I've got an older sister who's, you know, in her 30s now. She's a primary school teacher. And my brother, who's 2 years older than me, he's a professional like dancer and has been in really? Musicals around the world and all that sort of stuff. So yeah.
Wow. So yeah, it sounds like a very classic working class family, and then you and your brother have just gone and out into a very obtuse area in comparison when you think about it.
Yeah, pretty much. I sort of like when I was in year 10 and sort of just thinking about what I wanted to do after school, I was literally just going to go to uni to study like sports management, maybe do that, something along those lines, because I was like, oh, what else can I do? And then sort of, yeah, it's just sort of accidentally led to me falling into comedy. So yeah.
There you go. Okay. So you mentioned something earlier about when you were younger, you were quite shy. And I do wonder, like, I know, let's talk about the CF component of your life. I mean, it is something that obviously defines your day to day. And it was very interesting seeing the fan comments, and someone was like, if you had a dollar for every time someone talked about CF, would you be rich? Which I thought was quite funny. Do you ever felt like as a kid when you realized the seriousness of it when you were like, I think you mentioned in the previous interview, you were about 8. Do you think that ever affected you? And then your parents' focus around being jovial was the thing that allowed you to break out of that? Because reading that interview, it sounds like you have a very healthy mindset about it. Like you basically say in this interview that well, I can't change it, so there's no point in worrying about it, in a nutshell.
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, I think that's sort of the mentality I've always had, and I attribute a lot of that to my parents when it goes back to, you know, not taking yourself too seriously. Like, I sort of found out accidentally just watching the TV one night. I was just playing my Nintendo DS or something like that, and then I heard like whatever I was watching, I heard them mention CF, so I was like, oh, I'll have a watch. And then they sort of started to say like how serious it was. So in that sense, I sort of accidentally found out that I was dying pretty much, which is a weird thing to experience. But at the same time, sort of, yeah, you know, when you're 8 years old and you find out that sort of stuff, you sort of, you know, you get a little bit down about it. But at the same time, I think I realized pretty quickly that there's nothing I can do about it. So there's no point, you know, just
worrying.
Been in a self-pity party about it. So I thought, oh, well, I'll just crack on with it, see how I go. And I really sort of, like obviously growing up in rural country New South Wales, you get, you know, obviously mates who are into a bit of sort of risque humour. So I think a lot of my sort of attitude towards like kind of making a joke out of CF came from playing like in COD lobbies with my mates pretty much, and they'd just say the most fucked up stuff ever. And so the first time someone ever cracked a CF joke to me, I was just in a COD lobby with like two of my mates, and then my mate who didn't crack the joke, he was like, you can't fucking say that. Like, and then that I just started pissing myself laughing, and I was like, oh, this is, you know, something I can just like make fun of and sort of, you know, de-weaponize it in that sense. So
yeah, that's a really good way of looking at it. I think that is a funny thing about young groups of men, and that they always test what is like, what's the barrier? How far can you go with something, particularly with jokes?
Yeah.
There's something I do love about that, because it sort of works out what is fair and is not fair in society, so to speak. So it's really interesting to say that, you know, you had this one friend who cracked the joke and you're pissing yourself, and then you got the other friend who's like, you can't say that, man. Like, yeah. That's really interesting. My brother's got type 1 diabetes. It's not as serious as CF. However, it is still pretty serious. And I mean, the way that they project it out in terms of life expectancy is somewhat similar.
Yeah.
And, you know, everyone focuses on that aspect. I was just doing my research last night. When you look at things, changes in the impact to individuals, I think, you know, in this interview, it said life expectancy for someone who has CF is 40. But when you go and look at some of the research now, the actual average is increasing by about 7 to 8 years every decade.
Yeah.
So now it's more like 50. And I guess I was intrigued because there's also all sorts of research for diabetes at the moment, which, you know, I've always said, if I get rich, that's the thing I'm going to donate to. Like, that's my cause, so to speak. So what's the state of research like for people who have CF? Because I saw you were sharing this this new drug that could become available. What's it like for you, from your perspective? What's it like at the moment?
Well, for me, I guess, like, in a lot of ways, I'm a lot luckier than a lot of people with CF, and I'm able to live a pretty close to normal life without really having to, you know, think about CF on a day-to-day basis, aside from, you know, daily medications and all that sort of stuff. But it's sort of like, depending on the severity of your type of CF, there are different names for sort of people's types and all that sort of stuff. But mine's been, again, I've been lucky enough to sort of have a less severe one. But in terms of research, there's just like, there seems to be new stuff coming out all the time, but the sort of only road bump is sort of just like getting funding for it and listing it on the PBS and getting all of these sorts of things approved, because they do cost just shit tons of money.
Yeah.
To get it approved, especially in Australia. Like, over in the UK, US, all that sort of stuff, these sort of things get approved quicker than it does here. So I think it's just, you know, that's probably been the biggest road bump for a lot of people in terms of, you know, the CF community, where it's just like, there's like a lot of drugs that could help us and could potentially save our lives that just aren't being funded pretty much. Yeah,
right,
pretty
okay. much. So, and the PBS, for people who don't understand it, is basically when you buy medication, it's subsidized, a certain medication is subsidized by the government. You know, like when someone buys the pill or a lot of SSRIs or antidepressants, they're often on the PBS. So they're super, super cheap. It's why the pill can be like $8. Same with antidepressants. What was that particular drug that you were talking about recently?
Well, it's called Trikafta. And pretty much the I've seen there was another dude who has CF who's like who does a lot more work than me in terms of like how much he does for CF. And he's like he's been running marathons and all that sort of stuff. His name's Bradley Dryburgh. I hope I'm pronouncing his last name right. So yeah, he does a shit ton of work for the CF community. And basically what he's been sharing and what a lot of other people with CF have been sort of advocating for is this Trikafta drug. And it's something that I don't think I personally will have to sort of worry about taking in, you know, anytime soon. But yeah, it's been proven to increase lung function and general health of people with CF across the board pretty much. So it's probably the best drug that people with CF have had in a very, very long time that's sort of been able to lower the risk of, you know, really serious health issues in the future. So yeah, that's what people are trying to advocate for and try to get funded on the PBS. So yeah.
Interesting. We'll have to see what happens there. Like I said, it's super fascinating area for me because of what is, you know, potentially like I just look at what is happening in that next wave of technology in the US is all about biotech. You know, we had that original wave sort of early 2000s, but we're now gearing up. When we look at things, you know, like even just the mRNA vaccine, the fact that that has come about like to prominence, we know it's been tested in the last 10 to 15 years, but it's now the predominant type of vaccine being used for something, some sort of flu-esque vaccine or coronavirus-esque vaccine.
Yeah.
I wonder what the potential is for a lot of diseases like this.
Yeah, a lot of talk that I've been seeing over like CF-related research is like gene therapy and all that sort of stuff. And there's been sort of a big debate about that. I haven't really looked too much into it, so I can't really, you know, delve really deep into it. But there's just a lot of talk about that. And, you know, obviously the debate is, you know, is it moral to, you know, alter your genes pretty much? And I'm like, oh, if it's going to save my life.
What kind of question is that?
I'd be pretty fucking happy to.
Do you know the people who ask those sort of questions are people who don't have any issues?
Yeah, legit. Yeah.
It's always the case. I always find that really, really odd. It's like, should we fix this issue or are we like doing something wrong to the human body? I'm like, dude, this person needs help. Like, what kind of fucking question is that?
Yeah, it's like, it's like across the board, like even with anti-vaxxers, like you see the major majority of anti-vaxxers are the ones that have never had a fucking issue in their life and are just pissed off that they can't, you know, have the privilege of going to a pub anymore. But yeah.
Yeah, that gene therapy thing you're talking about, I remember looking at it for years, way back in the day. It's called CRISPR-Cas9.
Yeah.
Which is really interesting. And so the idea is it goes in and basically like an mRNA, it goes at the mRNA level. So the idea would be that you would take a pill in the future and it would go in and essentially change components of your DNA and replace it with a new string. But yeah, it's super technical. I'm not going to pretend to explain it. I don't want to get into it in this interview, but it's for anyone who's interested, go have a look. I strongly recommend it. Okay. TikTok as a platform. We're talking about that earlier, right? There's certain things that you can't, like I remember a few months ago, I was just saying to someone that apart from the fact that there's all these e-com features that they're just released that is bringing them up to par with Instagram, they actually announced last week too at TikTok World, which is their big ad event. There's just certain things you cannot do on any other platform but TikTok. Now, that can come down to editing options. I also think it comes down to the psyche of the user. I think like the nature of TikTok, it's got a bit of Vine to it. So it's predominantly positive and comedic. Whereas you look at something like Instagram to me is about image and portraying an image that the best possible image to people. Whereas Facebook and Twitter is about just blurting out what's in your head.
Yeah.
And so TikTok has gotten this rarefied space of like, it is the social media platform because like, what is it? It's sort of like a combination of Instagram, Reddit, and Twitter, if that makes sense. And a bit of, like, there's the Vine component as well. Why do you think TikTok dominates over the other platforms?
I think there's just so many layers to it. I think, you know, the fact that it's just so accessible, it just hooks you in straight away. That's probably the biggest thing. It just keeps you there for, you know, hours on end. Like, I legit didn't go to sleep like two nights ago till like 4:30 in the morning. Just, I was like just scrolling through TikTok the whole night pretty much. And I thought I'd been on there for like 2 hours max, but it was like 4.5. And I was like, fuck, this is like dangerous. It's just the addiction factor. It just keeps you locked in because it just, the algorithm, it's so weird. It just, it knows what you want. So it just keeps you there. So I just try to limit how much time I'm actually spending on there. I just try to post my shit and then dip. I don't know what it is, but it's just like, it's so addicting.
It's like a, so I guess the algorithm is one component to it. I mean, the type of content you get fed on TikTok, that is the thing, like from a product point of view, they've done really well is they've used machine learning to just basically allow a bot to understand you as an individual. And so like often the criticism I hear from people who haven't gotten into TikTok is basically because they haven't gotten in, or they haven't hit that 2 week mark. You know how you need like a week or two for the algorithm to really work you out?
Yeah.
Like they haven't gotten to that point, which I always find interesting. But once it learns you, it's like every single video, man, is good. Everything is good. Like, you know, they'll test a few videos that have got like 10 likes or something to see whether, like, clearly they're testing it amongst a cohort of people. But I don't know. It's that algorithm is scary good. Scary good.
It's insane, like absolutely insane. And I don't really get into the sort of like, I don't really try to think about the, like the technical aspects of it just because I don't know how any of it works. It's just, I'm so like out of touch with it, but I mean, it's worked in my favor for the past 2 years, so I'm not complaining, but it just seems to change all the time and just like adapt pretty much to anything. So I think that's why it's stuck around for so long and at like at such a dominant level.
Why do you like TikTok? And then why do you also convert? What do you also conversely hate about TikTok?
I actually mostly hate TikTok. Like, honestly, I just think the app has like gotten to a point where it's just like, I don't know how to explain it, but there's just like, you go into some like rabbit holes of TikTok and it's just nothing but toxicity. And just like, it's like Twitter in a lot of ways. Like, you say one thing and people will take that and just turn it into 50 other things that make you look like the biggest piece of shit and just like takes away from your normal message. Like it's just insane. Like, I like that I've been able to sort of create my platform and like pretty much build my, you know, the foundations of my career around it. But at the same time, I think it's doing a lot of harm. Like, honestly, I think it's doing a lot of harm to especially young kids. And I think we're going to look back in like 30 years on social media, the way we look at smoking, like in the 70s, and we're like, how the fuck do we let kids do this so often pretty much? But I think there just needs to be like, they need to pull back a bit because it's just, there's just so much division on TikTok that I'm seeing.
Yeah.
But because of the algorithm, it might just be because I'm a piece of shit and it knows who I am.
Yeah. It could be that you're doing political stuff and then that somehow, most of that's on Instagram. So I don't know if that's actually true, but I know what you mean. Like, there was something recently, you know, that couch guy thing.
Who cares? Who gives a shit? Like, I hate when people try to, and I think that's probably the best example right now. Like, people saw 5 seconds of someone's relationship and just stretched it out and tried to analyze it from every single angle and just scrutinize these people to, you know, the brink. So like, it's such bullshit.
If nothing is on a post, if something is not 100% kosher, and it couldn't offend anyone, you are bound to be sure that people, and that's the thing I see often is the top comment, because the top liked comment gets pushed up to the top.
Yeah.
In the comment section for those who aren't listening and haven't fucking used TikTok. But the first thing that I often see is like people in the comments need to chill out.
Yeah.
Like that's a regular thing. And it's often to do with like a kid or a dog or a relationship or like a personal interaction. And you're very right. You're very right in that aspect, as you see 5 to 15 seconds of something and then people extrapolate it to their entire life.
Yeah. Like that couch guy video is legitimately the best example of it that I've seen on TikTok. Like I saw this one video and it was, you know, because you can do obviously like 3 minute videos on TikTok now. It was a 3 minute video of her just analyzing the video with like every single angle and theory. And I'm like, you saw 5 seconds. Like, why do you need to just like analyze this relationship from like every single angle? It doesn't make sense pretty much. And the comments were just the worst. They were like, yeah, I knew something was wrong because the vibes were off. I'm like, fuck you, you're 13. Like, yeah, get off the app. Like, you don't know anything. Yeah.
And also you don't know this person. Like there was another one that a TikToker, this chick, I can't remember her name, but her handle's Gary Winthorpe. She's very fucking funny.
I think her name's Sophie Griffin. She's so funny.
I tried to pitch her ages ago and nothing came of it, but I still follow her to this day because I just find her incredibly funny. But she was talking about how like someone was watching, like this is all social media. I know it's amplified on TikTok, but like the example given was like a YouTube interview with Timothy Chalamet, and the guy was anxious in the interview and people were like, oh my God, I'm so sad that Timothy's anxious. And then the person who posted the video is like, oh, Timmy's fine, like it'll be okay. And she's just saying, you don't know this guy.
Yeah.
Like, why are you calling him Timmy? He's just a fucking actor. Like, get over it, relax.
Oh, go into like his anxiety and all that sort of stuff, the absolute plethora of trauma dumping on that app, it pisses me off so much. Like, people will like be, I made a video ages ago that I don't even think it's on my account anymore. And I said, I can't even remember what I said. I said something about something that happens at home in my life that wasn't even a bad thing. It was just like an everyday occurrence that happens. And people were like, are you sure this isn't like previous
abuse?
I'm like, no, my parents were fine, pretty much. My parents were pretty good parents. And then they were like, well, it could be unrecognized trauma. And I'm like, I'm fine. Like, like, if you got trauma, don't put it on TikTok. Go to fucking therapy. This is why kids suck these days. That sounds very boomerish to say, but yeah.
It's true, though. People externalize a lot of shit on each other on social media. I had something recently where I posted something about a fellow WOG friend. So there's certain cultural things in the Greek community that you just say all the time, right? I'll give you a few examples. When you go into someone's house, before you walk in the house, you got to throw in coins into the house. I don't know why. It's a dumb tradition, but it's a tradition. When someone buys a house, gets engaged, or gets married, there's a joke. And even when you're in a relationship, my uncles and aunties have done this to me for years. You give them the comment, babies when? Because in Greek families, people expect big Greek families, right? And so I commented on this mutual influencers page because she bought a house, and I said, babies when? And her partner liked it. He's Italian. He gets the joke. And I got this barrage over DM about how I was like fertility shaming this person. And I was like, come on, man. And the thing that got her to be quiet was I basically said to her, you're being culturally insensitive. That's the only way to bring some reality back to this person. Not it's none of their business. Not that if the person has a problem, they'll say something. Stop externalizing your shit on us.
Yeah,
it does my fucking head in. And I'm a nobody. I've got 1,000 followers on Instagram and I still have to deal with this shit.
Yeah, it's so crazy how insane people can get. Like, I don't really... I post some stuff about my CF and it's not my main form of content just because I don't want to make that. I don't want to be the CF guy.
Yeah, you don't. Yeah, you don't want that.
But a lot of my fan base know that I have CF. But every time I post about CF or like mention it in a live or something like that, people are like, you don't actually have CF, do you? I'm like, why the fuck would I fake a disease? Like, it's just, people just extrapolate so much stuff that it's insane. And I need to just stop looking at comments in general because I get so mad about it.
Now, just to play devil's advocate, comment sections can also be really good. Like, I got to say, some of the best bit that I get from friends sharing TikToks to each other is just I get a video sent to me and the comment that they send is just comments. Check the comments. It's so fucking good. That's why I feel that it's like Reddit, because the benefit of Reddit is the comment section.
Yeah, no, I think it's a good balance. Like, comments are usually shit and it's just a cesspool of bullshit, but when they're good, they're fucking amazing.
Yeah, so people listening, stop fucking externalizing your shit. What if I told you the way to take your brand to the next level in 2021 is with TikTok ads? A lot of our clients come to us with a problem. They need to take their brand to the next level. They're typically doing 5 to 10K a month, and they need to jump to that 25, 50K per month level. And Instagram and Facebook just isn't what it was. So what's the commonality amongst all this? It is primarily opportunity in a saturated market. And we think that TikTok ads today is the answer. Now, Narelle follows a two-phase process to guide you as a challenger brand on the way to growth. Phase one is all about knowing your brand and niche back to front with a focus on breaking even or getting above a break even. Phase two is scaling that creative to blow up your sales in the process once we've secured you as the leader in that niche on TikTok. You do this with the right partner, a committed partner like Narelle, and you'll build that confidence in an area that has typically been saturated in the past. There's not a silver bullet, and we'd love to chat to you. So book in a consultation with our specialist team. Just go to narelle.com/TikTok. That's narelle.com/TikTok. And we'll chat to you from there. All right, let's talk about the creative process. So I would say you actually posted about this today on your stories. Character work, I see yours as some of the best in the business in this age demographic. It's clearly very, very good. Like I said, I'm a particular fan of Cheryl.
Yep.
I know you do political stuff as well, but it seems to be more on Instagram, which is sort of typical of Instagram. Do you lean in one direction to a particular type of content?
I think it sort of depends on the platform. Like, I'll post like a lot of my political videos on Instagram and Twitter just because they seem to sort of be the best types of platforms for that, as well as TikTok. But it's just like at the moment, the political and news-based videos are pretty much just guaranteed views and likes pretty much because people just argue in the comments. So it just, it's automatic engagement and just it boosts the video straight away. So,
but does that annoy you though?
Yeah, it really does. Cause like I'm sort of stuck in two worlds about it. I'm like, people are obviously engaging with that content and it's something that obviously gets people involved and people seem to enjoy it for the comedy side of it. But at the same time, I feel like the videos just sort of write themselves and there's no real, you know, real, like at the start when I started doing them, there was a real creativity involved in it and I sort of felt like fueled to do them. But now I feel like I'm just sort of doing it for views pretty much. And I feel like that's the wrong mentality to be in. And from the start, that's been something that I've sort of tried to lean away from. Cause I feel like if you're having fun making the content that you're making, that's when it translates the best. And that's when the audience sort of gets around it. So I guess for me, the sort of thing that I leant towards at the start was just like, don't try to be funny, just try to be fun pretty much. And that's something I learned from, you know, Hamish and Andy. Like I think a 60 Minutes report from them, and they said just try to be fun rather than funny, and they'll say that. So that's been what I've tried to stick to. But yeah, it's hard as a creator to not go towards guaranteed views because obviously that's money in the door pretty much. But yeah, I think creatively for me, what I want to lean towards more is sort of the character work, and then sort of as I start going into YouTube, really leaning towards that sort of Chappelle Show, Key and Peele style of sketch comedy and trying to put like social commentary in that, but just trying to hide it better than I do on the political videos I do now. So sort of in two worlds about it.
Yeah, it's a good point. I could see how with the character work you get more into a flow state, but there's also something a bit more timeless in doing character work. It'd be much more rewarding, whereas the new stuff, like, because it's real escapism. Whereas the news and political stuff, it's really just commentary. Like it's a form of satire in a way.
Yeah, exactly. I feel like when I started, because I started doing 100% character work, I feel like that's where I gained like a lot of my audience that are just like diehard loyal to the end. But the most of the political videos and like current event videos and all of the COVID update videos that I used to do, those, even though it got me half my audience pretty much, those are the fans that are like, yeah, he's funny. But again, I don't think they'd stick around for more than 2 years pretty much. So I think the character work gets you more loyal and diehard fans pretty much, or fans, followers. I don't really know how to describe them.
So when you go through and try and identify these characters, you said before Paul, Dad, how do you go through the process of identifying people? Do you literally just pick up people that you meet on the street? Is it people that are close around you so you can know the intricate, like little mannerisms of them? How do you go about it?
It's sort of an amalgamation of things. Like Paul, for instance, that literally just comes from my dad's physicality and little sayings and like cadences in his voice and all that sort of stuff. But it's actually a lot of my mum's personality and just like being a little bit cheeky and all that sort of stuff. So those two things kind of melded into what became the Paul character. With Tiff and Jess, it was sort of the same. It's sort of based off sort of girls that I went to school with, but like dialed up to 11. And then I thought because obviously when you do character work as an Australian on social media trying to do comedy, people are like, this is just Chris Lilley. So I wanted to sort of shy away from that. So I was like, how am I going to sort of differentiate this from Jermaine? So I just made them like twin sisters, but really they're the same person. So, and then with the other characters like Sebastian and Tyson, and even the more like niche ones, like I used to do like a priest character, like a youth counselor character. They sort of just come from little like bits and pieces. Like I don't want to say his name, but there was a youth counselor that used to come to my school a lot, and just he was the biggest knob pretty much. So yeah, and it's pretty much a mix of different things here and there, but most of the main characters that I do, they've come from somewhere pretty close to me, pretty much, except for Cheryl. I literally just like was like, what if Terry from the smoking ad had a sister? Pretty much that's where it came from.
Do you have a personal favorite?
It sort of changes. I think the funnest character to play is probably Tyson, just because he's a bit of that like rugged sort of bogan character that just like that you see, you know, pacing out around a, you know, in front of the courthouse right before his case pretty much. But I think if I'm looking at it from a, you know, a fan base standpoint, it's probably like Paul and Cheryl. And then probably the best ones to fall into like very quickly are Tiff and Jess and all that sort of stuff. So they all have their, you know, their things that I love about them and I sort of lean towards. But yeah, probably I think overall it probably comes down to a split between Paul and Cheryl pretty much. Okay.
Paul and Cheryl. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense.
Except shooting the Cheryl videos for a TikTok, it's fine because I do the lines once. And it's easy, but on YouTube, when you're shooting for like 2 hours, it feels like you're putting fucking razor blades down your throat pretty much.
Yeah.
So I'm probably going to get myself like major vocal damage in about 10 years if I keep doing it. But
that Cheryl voice, yeah, I feel like you should see an ENT about like warm-ups and stuff like that, because I've been told that as well. Like I had some random issue with my throat. Like I think it was to do with my tonsils and I have this really bad habit of like hoiking.
Yeah.
Like, and, you know, cause it's lazy. I should just blow my nose. And the ENT was like to me, you should probably stop doing that if you want to continue doing podcasts.
Yeah.
like you're going to give yourself polyps or, something like some sort of damage. And like, I got the hoiking habit from my dad.
Yeah.
And he's had like surgery to like remove polyps and stuff like that. So I should really look at that as like an example.
Yeah. I think I need to definitely talk to someone and go, how can I do this like crackhead voice in the safest way so I can still do the other characters pretty much? But
yeah,
it's painful.
So let's talk about how you see yourself as a comedian. You know, like obviously social media was the thing that kicked things off for you. You're only really at an early stage of your career. You, what, 20?
19. Yeah, I turned 20. Turned 20 in January, late January. Okay.
So not even 20 yet. Social media was obviously a gateway drug for you finding stand-up. It seems like you only had a few opportunities to do stand-up before all these lockdowns.
Yeah.
But I do wonder, like, what is your potential, particularly with the character component? Like, you remind me a lot with Will Gibbs in that regard. Like, the character work is a very valuable trait. And so I start to think about things like film and TV. But one of the good questions we had in the comments that I was thinking about as well was, like, where do you see yourself in even 2 years from now? The question was 3 years, but to me, three years feels like a long time at that age.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess probably for me, the main goal with all of this sort of stuff, like when I started thinking about it as a possible career that I've sort of started to try to mold now, is sort of getting into, you know, film, TV and theatre. Those are the things that I want to do most. And it's sort of been something that, like, even as a kid, like, I didn't really like ever think that I could do it, but I always looked up to people like Jim Carrey and, you know, all of these like comedy greats who would be like mainly film and television sort of personalities. And I sort of wanted to, you know, emulate that in some respects. So like for me, I think the main goal over the next couple of years is to just really focus on getting into actual acting and trying to, you know, do all of that stuff and jump into those sorts of things. But at the same time, stand-up's been great, and stand-up's a great way to like jump into film and TV and sort of the more mainstream forms of media now. But yeah, for me, I think I just want to, as soon as I can, get out of the sort of social media influencer stage and sort of hop into, you know, film and TV and really just, you know, exploring what I can do sort of creatively and artistically in the actual, you know, acting industry. Because I feel like, you know, obviously there's a certain amount of time that you're going to have relevance on social media, and, you know, that's, you know, it's always going to come to an end at some point. So if I can sort of just mold this and sort of, you know, boost myself into, you know, an acting career, that'd be, you know, sort of my main goal.
So what do you see as like the keys? What are you imagining as the key steps for you? What are your personal goals over the next year? Is it continue cruising with doing the social media management stuff and starting to experiment more with stand-up and see if you can get your own show going, and then start to think about the TV side of things? How do you like mentally think about that at the moment?
I think just over the next sort of year, I'm hoping once I get to a stage where I can make all of my income from the videos and social media and start pumping out YouTube content, and getting to a place where I can make that my main source of income, that's when I'll really start to focus on other aspects as well. It's just hard to, especially now with lockdown, you can't focus on anything without it, you know, being stopped fully pretty much. But you know, sort of over the next sort of 2 months when things open up, I'll really start to, you know, try to land auditions and, you know, try to, you know, jump into acting as soon as I can, while also, you know, doing as many stand-up sets as I can at night. And yeah, over the past, you know, couple of months, I've been writing my own stand-up show, doing my own, you know, 40 minutes to an hour that I was thinking about potentially doing it at, you know, next year's Comedy Fest, but, you know, just because of lockdown, haven't been able to test the material. So I guess for me, a main goal of mine would be to do maybe like a regional tour at the end of next year and just sort of test the show that way leading into the Comedy Fest for 2023. Because I think the main thing for me is that I want to get out of the sort of reputation of, oh, he's just a TikToker. Like, I want to be known as an actual comedian, because I feel like I understand that like TikTok, like, is, it's reputable and it's an actual, you know, way to mold a career. And I do consider myself a comedian, but just in terms of like the industry and sort of the more mainstream things, I think there's still sort of a bias that leans towards TikTokers aren't real, you know, actors and comedians and all that sort of stuff. So I think for me to really jump into that, that would be something that I'm, you know, really, really focused on
Yeah, so it's about getting into multiple formats, which makes sense. And I think the way you thinking about it is smart, because you're right, you can't start making bets on TV and film and going to casting gigs when you're not earning money at all. Because if you go, because then you go into a good mate of mine who's always been in TV, and they sold a show to Channel 7, said it really, really well. It's like he still does casting jobs, even though he has his own studio where they make cartoons. He still does it for the side income. And he says that because he doesn't give a shit if he gets the job or not, and he just goes in and tries to do his best, he comes across less needy in a lot of these interviews and a lot of these other actors, because they're really reliant on this being the next big thing. They don't get the work. So he gets a lot of work, mainly doing commercials at the moment, which pay really, really, really well. And he's been on some really famous commercials like CBA and 7-Eleven, stuff like that. So I thought that was a really good mindset to have. And it sort of sounds like you doing this now gives you that ability to do that in the long term.
Yeah, I think talking to a lot of other creators, a sort of the main issue I see is that they want to put all their eggs into, you know, obviously their social media, but if they're going to branch out, they just put all their eggs into one other format. But I just want to dip my toes into everything, just because, like, if I put all my eggs into sort of film and acting, I might not love it, and then I'll just like sort of fuck myself over that way. But if I, you know, put my toes into, you know, comedy on social media, plus stand-up, acting, stuff on the side, little bits here and there, plus my other regular jobs here and there as well, I think that's probably going to be what I'm going to find sort of like the most excitement out of. And I'm going to, you know, sort of, it might take me longer to find out what I actually am really passionate about, but at the same time, I don't want to limit myself to just putting all my eggs into one thing and then finding out in 12 months, you know, 24 months time that I hate it. So, yeah.
Who's informed you the most around that? Because, you know, there's a clear generation of internet comedians above you guys, like Luke and Lewis. You've done interviews with them. You're in Melbourne. Is there any particular advice you've received from anyone in particular that really stood out?
Well, probably Luke and Lewis have been the biggest help in terms of like guiding what I want to do career-wise. And they've been probably the biggest sort of mentors in that sense for so many different reasons. So those are the two blokes that I would probably sort of go to for advice the most. So I can really only really nail it down to those two blokes. But, you know, you get advice here and there from everybody that you sort of take into account. But at the same time, it's really just a gut feeling that you have to have within yourself. And because really at the end of the day, only you know what's right for you. So, I just take everybody's advice with a little, you know, little grain of salt. But at the end of the day, I have a lot of trust in myself and what I want to do. And hopefully that'll turn out well.
So before we get into some rapid fire questions to finish things off, I want to ask you, growing up, you would have paid attention to many different comics. If you had a Franken comedian where you could combine a bunch of different elements of comedians, or you combine even your favorite comedians, you don't have to pick specific elements, who would they be?
Probably I'd say if I was like to mold it into like who I would become and who my like sort of dream comic for myself would be, I'd probably mix it with Bo Burnham, Carl Barron, and Mark Maron. Those are probably my three favorite comedians at the moment, plus Dave Chappelle. I think those four are probably on my Mount Rushmore of comedians for different, you know, different reasons. Yeah, I think if I can just take Dave's like intelligence and just like he's more of a philosopher than he's a comedian at points. Carl Barron, just because he's like the first real comic that I was able to, like me and my dad, like have like been to his live shows and all that sort of stuff. And just the, you know, he's an Aussie icon pretty much. Mark Maron, because I think just he's the most probably insightful comedian that I've watched recently. And just like, I relate to him in the fact that he's very angry on the inside. So he just like tries to blurt that out onto the stage. And he makes a lot of like really great shit out of that. And then Bo Burnham, just because I think for, you know, the generation that he's from, he's been sort of the biggest voice in terms of like empathizing the internet age and, you know, what younger people are going through, and just sort of really articulating for the first time sort of what the collective feeling about the internet and sort of the issues surrounding that have been for people my age. And, you know, I've got a mate, Zach, who helps me shoot videos with, you know, me and Liam Dowling, who just, we absolutely idolize him. Like, Inside was probably one of the defining specials that I've, you know, ever watched. So, yeah.
I agree with that. I think, you'll find this so funny. This mate of mine who does that commercial stuff and has this studio, Stepmates Studios, love the Stepmates boys. Seb and Mark, we all watched that so many times. I remember they were over during the period when we weren't in lockdown for drinks and nibbles, and we just had and we had another mate over and he hadn't seen it, and we just put it on for him straight away. Had it on in the background. And I had like a bunch, I still have a bunch of his songs on my playlist. What was your favorite song from that?
It changes all the time. Like, I think it sort of depends what mood I'm in, but I at the minute, my favorite one is Goodbye. And then it's like a rotation of like Goodbye, Don't Want to Know, Look Who's Inside Again, and then probably Sexting as well. Those are probably the four that I go back to the most. But I think it's great, because I think it's just pretty much just taken away every excuse that creators have, pretty much, that just says, oh no, I need a camera crew, I need, you know, people to help me make videos. I'm like, no, you can, that's sort of just taken away every excuse that a lot of creators have had. So I think we're going to see probably over the next couple of years, like a lot of inspiration taken from that in so many different ways.
Yeah. I think for my generation, it was sort of a similar defining special might have been like a Louis C.K. special before he became a serial pest. another one for me was, are you a George Carlin fan? Like, I was obsessed with George Carlin.
I love Carlin, but I feel like a lot of comedians like him get to a stage where they become more preachy than they do comedians. Like, I feel like I fucking love Ricky Gervais, but I just feel like he's starting to lean into more just like preacher territory than anything else. But at the same time, I still have a lot of love for them because Carlin was sort of like one of the first stand-ups of like the 70s to really just sort of change the game, pretty much, I think.
His last special, which was literally a few months before he died, was amazing. And he's like, he's in trackies, like old man trackies and an old man jumper. I just always remember this, he's just like goofy. If you type in George Carlin goofy, like, it's one of the best segments of that show. It's so funny.
Have you heard of the, he did a special like in Vegas the day before 9/11, and it was called, the special was called, like, legitimately the special was called I Kind of Like It When a Lot of People Die. He shot it and it was released the day before 9/11. And then as soon as 9/11 happened, they just took it, like, it's completely wiped from history pretty much. Only a few people have the recordings.
Wow.
Yeah.
I've never seen this.
Yeah, it's really hard to find, but I heard
it's on YouTube now. It looks like it's all been published in the last year.
Oh, dope. Yeah, because I saw about 2 years ago, I heard Anthony Jeselnik talking about it, and I was just like, holy shit, like, what a coincidence.
Oh, right. Okay. And so 2 years ago, Joe Rogan spoke about it. It says George Carlin's lost 9/11 special.
Yeah. Yeah.
And he was talking about it with, oh, fuck. Remember Anthony Jeselnik?
Yeah, I love him. He cops a lot of flack, but I love him. I reckon he's so funny. I think just with Carlin, like, I think it's sort of best for people, especially creatively, to just leave a little bit in the tank, so you don't sort of like run it dry and just sort of become stale after a while. Because I feel like at the end of Carlin's career, it just became sort of, again, as I said,
same,
and like, to the point where it's like, it's less comedy and more like just talking at an audience. Like, his last couple of shows before he died were just like little one night things in Las Vegas on the strip, and people came out and just said it was sad pretty much. So
it was
like
depressing,
I think,
right?
Yeah. So I think like if for creative people, I think the best thing to do is just like leave a little bit in the tank. Cause again, that will probably propel you to your next thing pretty much. So I just feel like that's where he sort of fell off the rails a bit, but at the same time, one of the goats.
Yeah. One of the greats.
Yeah.
All right, let's get into the rapid fire questions to finish things off. I know you've been in lockdown, but typically what would a morning and evening routine look like?
Well, during lockdown, it's been probably just wake up in the afternoon routine pretty much. I love a good sleep in, but pretty much sort of the morning's pretty dry pretty much. I don't get up to much. I think sort of most of my energy kicks in during the arvo, because I'm really not a morning person. So like, you know, morning's just like getting up and trying to get out of the slump that is the morning pretty much. Just like pumping myself with coffee pretty much. That's all I do. And then night, it's just like stuff my face with whatever's in the cupboard after dinner and just like binge watch stand up pretty much. Yeah.
Yeah, right. And evening is just watching shit?
Pretty much, yeah. Just like... yeah, I'll just like binge watch Netflix. Probably movies is probably more my thing. I can't watch TV shows. It's just too much time. I like getting shit done in like 2 hours.
Yeah, right.
I've been watching a lot of stand-up specials at night recently. I'm keen. Dave Chappelle's new special just came out today.
Oh, I saw the trailer for that. Yeah.
Yeah, I think it came out. I think it's already out now. So I might watch that tonight actually. But yeah.
That's a good, great point. I literally saw the trailer for that on Netflix. I was wondering what the name, what was it called? The Closer?
Something like that, yeah.
It's going to be good because his special a year ago, 8:46, was really good.
I watched that last night. Like, no shit, just watched that last night.
Yeah.
It's so good.
Yeah, it's really, really good. All right, last question for you. What would be a purchase you would highlight under $200 that you've made over the last year or so?
My merch was pretty good, so I recommend people get around that next time that drops. But I think it's a pretty boring answer. So like, unless you're like a, you know, creator, it's not going to be very valuable. But I bought these really good lav mics for like $90 that work really, really well with the camera I'm using now. When like I was trying to look, and it was like $300 to $500 for the good ones that I wanted, and then I just found these little shitty cheap ones that have just worked wonders for me. So
what's the brand?
I think it's called like Novo or something. They have like some like higher tech ones, but the ones I got, they're just like a little receiver and transmitter, and they're easy as, they work wonders.
Yeah, I think distributed audio, something that's actually near you, is even if it's $100, is a worthwhile investment. The camera audio is dog shit.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, no, especially with like YouTube videos I've shot. Like I go back through like YouTube videos that are on my channel now, I'm like, the audio just from the camera alone just sucks.
It's terrible. Absolutely terrible. Blake, thank you so much for coming on. Like I said, it's a real pity we couldn't have you in person, but I think when everything's said and done, we'll be moved into this new studio space, hopefully by November. Life will be somewhat normal. I'm sure you'll be back in Melbourne in the next few months. So we'll have to do something in person next time around. It'd be nice to get you in there with Luke and Lawrence as well. I think it'd be quite funny. Where can people find you on the interwebs?
Pretty much just Instagram, TikTok, Twitter, Facebook, YouTube, just all at Blake Pavey. So get around that. So yeah.
If you Google Blake Pavey, first thing that comes up is Instagram, interestingly. Oh,
great.
TikTok as well, YouTube, all that sort of stuff. So we'll make sure we link that. Blake, thanks so much for coming on the show.
Too easy. Thanks for having me.
Thank you so much for checking out this episode. If you liked it, do subscribe, and of course like it on YouTube if you're watching as well. We'd really appreciate that. For audio, if you've not already listening on your podcast app, you can search for it on any good app, including Spotify, Pocket Casts, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, etc. For video, if you're not watching, you can search Uncommon Podcast on YouTube. It's the first one that appears every single time. But behind the scenes, do follow us on Instagram and TikTok. It's @uncommon_show. But until next time, thanks for tuning in.